So I'm going to actually go in the opposite direction and talk about much more lab-based study in a much more controlled lab environment, but try and get at the same sort of biological weathering question. And I'm actually also going to be talking about something very different than what most people are talking about. I'm going to talk mostly about contaminated systems. So most of my work has looked at how trace metals interact with common soil minerals like iron oxides, and that's what I'm going to be talking about today. So first, I just want to take a short step back. This is an image that was taken in the early 2000s from a site in eastern Pennsylvania. And this site, like many others, both across the US and globally, became extremely contaminated through industrial processes. And in this case, it was actually zinc smelting. A local nonprofit actually owns at least part of this land and worked really hard. And in 2006, they were finally able to actually successfully revegetate this area. So now if you go there, at least in the middle of summer and not in November, it will look much more like this. And this was really awesome. It was really fantastic. Everybody was very excited that they have plants growing and all of the associated biological communities with those plants. But the introduction of that vegetation really changes the interaction, how the different metals in the soils can move around and interact with the environment. And so I was really interested in that. And so when plants are growing in contaminated soils, or any soils, some nice mood lighting, there are a bunch of different processes that they can sort of interact with the soils to enhance or alter weathering, right? So when plants grow, they produce protons. They also produce carbon dioxide from their roots and put that out into the surrounding soil that can acidify the surrounding soil, and that can alter how much mineral dissolves in that soil and overall biological weathering. Plants also, through evapotranspiration, take up water. They also stabilize soils, and so that can really alter how long minerals and water are in contact with each other and affect overall biological weathering. And then what I'm going to be talking about today is organic production. And so plants produce organics, also other microorganisms can produce organics, and then through just litter decomposition, various organic compounds can be produced and put out into the soil. And the presence of those different organic compounds can really have a big influence on the overall mineral dissolution and biological weathering. So I'm going to just focus in on this even more cartoony plant and what happens with different organic compounds. So I had two main questions here. The first was, when you have, you know, different organic compounds present, how does that influence these trace metal contaminated or co-precipitated minerals that might be present in soils? So here we're looking just really at the mineral, what's present in the mineral, and also how the, you know, how the composition and how the structure might influence how much metal is being released into the overlying soil solution. To do this, we use two different soil minerals. The first is a very common soil mineral, goethite. It's an iron oxyhydroxide. I'm sure all of you know all about it in soil systems. The other one is franklinite, and this is actually not a particularly common soil mineral. It's a zinc iron oxide, but it is often found in zinc smelting sites. And this actually happens because it's produced in high temperature processes that happen within the smokestacks. And then those minerals that are produced in the smokestacks are actually aerially deposited onto the surface of the soil. So we do see franklinite in these types of zinc smelting sites. And then in both of these cases, when they're present in contaminated sites, and the sites that I think about often have cadmium in them, when we have a normal mineral structure, we have, you know, irons and zinc in the represented with the black atoms. But when we have cadmium present, especially in relatively high concentrations in soils, we can have that cadmium actually substituting into this mineral structure for those irons or for those irons or zincs. So we're really interested. We actually synthesized a variety of different mineral or a variety of these minerals with a range of concentrations of cadmium in them. So the goethite has cadmium and iron, and the franklinite has cadmium, zinc, and iron in it. And then the other thing I wanted to look at was really at this the dissolved organic matter question, and what is composition of that dissolved organic matter, how does that relate to mineral dissolution? So here we're looking at, you know, if we have organic acids or amino acids or things like that, how does that affect how much iron and how much cadmium is being released from these minerals? To do this, we use two very common organic acids, oxalic acid and citric acid. These are often used in dissolution experiments. But we also added the introduction of histidine, which is a nitrogen-containing amino acid, and cysteine, which actually has a reduced sulfur group in the amino acid as well, to try and look at how those influence cadmium and iron release from these minerals, as well as, you know, the more commonly looked at oxalic acids. So we took these minerals. We had a range of cadmium concentrations in the two different minerals. We put them, we reacted them with each of these different organic compounds, so oxalic acid, citric acid, histidine, and cysteine, in 0.1 millimolar concentrations, which is roughly similar to what you might see in the soil, as much as we can get. We reacted them for about a month, and we took took samples throughout that month to look at concentrations of cadmium and iron in solution being released from the minerals over time. And just for the sake of time, I'm only going to talk about the end of the experiment, so just the concentrations that we were measuring at the very end. But we did kind of see a trend of increasing concentrations throughout the experiment, as you might expect. So the first thing to point out is that, not surprisingly, when you add more cadmium to a mineral, more cadmium comes out of that mineral. So here we have the goethite minerals. We have a 2% goethite, a 2% cadmium goethite, and then a roughly 5% cadmium goethite. And when we have more cadmium in that goethite mineral, more cadmium was coming out. Interestingly, we only see about doubling the cadmium in the goethite minerals. But for some of these ligands or some of these organic compounds, we see almost 40 times the cadmium coming out of the mineral. And I'm going to get back to that in a second about why we think some of that is going on. We also looked at, you know, the individual organic compounds that were present, and in general we saw oxalic acid and histidine removing the most cadmium from the mineral, or releasing the most cadmium from the mineral, and cysteine actually, interestingly, either always was equivalent to or less than the system which contained no organic compound, our control system. So cysteine is actually inhibiting how much cadmium is being released from the mineral, at least in comparison to a system where there's no organic presence. And that definitely could be due to some of the very strong sulfur-cadmium interactions that can occur. Organic sulfur is very strongly attracted to cadmium ions. And so if that's the case, we could actually be developing some sort of shell or something sort of encapsulating that mineral and stopping how much cadmium gets removed. In the franklinite system, again, more cadmium in the mineral meant more cadmium being removed from the mineral or dissolved from the mineral. We also see this same pattern where we have oxalic acid and histidine really enhancing how much cadmium is being released from the mineral, and cysteine really down lagging behind right near the system without any organic compound. The other interesting thing that I want to point out is here in the franklinite system, we actually had an order of magnitude more cadmium in the franklinite minerals. So we go from a 0.25% cadmium franklinite to a 2.8% cadmium franklinite. And in that case, as opposed to in the goethite system where we see this huge, huge increase with only a relatively small increase in cadmium in the mineral, for franklinite we kind of see the opposite. We see this sort of consistent five-fold increase of cadmium being released, no matter, you know, from the 0.25 to 2.8. So we see a much lower relative increase in the franklinite minerals in how much cadmium is released. So we tried to understand what is going on. Why is there such a large relative increase in the franklinite minerals in how much cadmium is present, but relatively small increase in how much cadmium is being released from those franklinite minerals? And to do that, we looked at how much cadmium was actually associated with amorphous phases, solid phases. So overall, in the goethite minerals, we see substantially less cadmium associated with amorphous phases than in the franklinite minerals total, the total amorphous associated cadmium. But this relative increase, the increase in how much cadmium is associated with amorphous materials, going from the low cadmium mineral to the high cadmium mineral in goethite was much, much higher. So we had a 4 times increase in amorphous associated cadmium for the goethite minerals and only about 1.5 times increase for the franklinite minerals. So we think that's really driving, rather than the total amount of cadmium that's present in the mineral, it's really that relative increase in the relative amount of cadmium that's associated with amorphous materials that's driving how much cadmium is available to be released. We also looked at iron release from these minerals. So this is the iron in solution, measured in solution, when no cadmium was present in the mineral. In general, we see a little bit more iron being released from oxalic acid than any of the other organic compounds. It's not particularly surprising, probably due to some reductive dissolution of the goethite. It's pretty well known to happen. When we started adding cadmium to our minerals, we see an overall decrease in how much iron gets released to the overall solution. And then actually when we add even more cadmium to the goethite minerals, we see a sort of change in reactivity, and all of a sudden more iron is coming out in the presence of cysteine as opposed to in the presence of the organic acid, the oxalic acid. So this is really interesting, and if we sort of step back a second and think about this on a maybe unrealistic, but ecosystem scale, lots of plants and microorganisms, things like that, they utilize very specific strategies to try and get at mineral-bound iron in systems, right? So they may put out certain specific organic compounds in order to try and dissolve iron minerals and acquire that iron for growth. In these kinds of contaminated systems, that strategy may no longer be an effective strategy for getting mineral-bound iron. So this is just something to think about in terms of when we think about contaminated systems, we don't have the same kinds of, we have very different constraints than we do in just normal systems. And so we also wanted to just look at this overall in terms of iron solubility or how much iron is being dissolved from these minerals. So in stoichiometric dissolution or congruent dissolution, we would expect that the molar ratio of all of our metals in the solid is going to, if it is a sort of a solid solution, ideal and homogeneous, we're going to expect that molar ratio in the solid to be similar to the molar ratio in the solution. And so we can actually take that sort of ideal stoichiometric dissolution and back calculate out using the molar ratio of the iron and cadmium that we have in our solids and the actual cadmium concentrations that we measured in solution. We can back calculate out what we would expect the iron dissolution to be if we had sort of ideal solid solutions and stoichiometric dissolution. So if we sort of are measuring what we would expect or if we are measuring what we get from stoichiometric dissolution, those points would lie along this one-to-one line. But in all cases, for all these minerals, and these are actually averaged for all the organic compounds that we looked at to try and get at a better sense of sort of what we might expect in the range of iron dissolution from these minerals. But for all of them, they lie below that stoichiometric dissolution line, that one-to-one line. So we are seeing less iron being released from these minerals in the presence of cadmium across the board for all four minerals. We also see that with increasing cadmium, we are getting further and further from that stoichiometric one-to-one line. So we're getting further and further from having as much iron as we would expect if these were ideal solid solutions. And so it really just sort of hammers home that these are not forming as solid solutions. They're much more forming with maybe pockets of cadmium or coatings of cadmium. They may be amorphous, they may not be amorphous. We don't measure any amorphous phases when we do X-ray diffraction and things like that. So there's a huge crystalline component here. But those smaller components may actually be what's really driving the overall metal release from these systems. And then just kind of to go back and sort of wrap up. So as I said, dissolved organic matter composition really can influence the overall metal release from coprecipitates. And what we saw was that when we add something like a reduced sulfur group, a cysteine or something like that, that's going to do two things. It's first going to enhance how much iron is being released from these minerals. It's also going to limit how much cadmium is being released from those minerals. So it has sort of multiple impacts on this one single mineral type. We can also look just at the structure and composition of these minerals. And when we have a large crystalline component compared to amorphous component, we might see a small amount of cadmium being released. When we have a larger relative proportion of amorphous cadmium present in those minerals, we're going to see a lot more cadmium released. And so understanding, you know, all of these different factors when we think about contaminated systems and how much metals may be available for release is really important. So with that, I can thank you and welcome any questions.
Are there questions or comments for Carl?
Coffee time.
Just a couple
of
minutes.
Sure. So when you look at that cadmium increase or release, do you think that cadmium would be taken out by the vegetation instead of the iron?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the question is whether cadmium would potentially be taken up instead of iron by plants or other organisms. Actually, cadmium does often get taken up through iron transporters and things on plant roots. So if you are seeing more cadmium in soil solution and less iron, it is possible just through sort of either indirect or sort of accidental uptake, but also through some of these iron transporters, cadmium could be taken up.
Could that be used like a bioremediation for
plants? If you want to use plants for bioremediation, I think that there's a lot of questions about that because then what do you do with the plants and things like that? But if you're aiming to get the plants, get the cadmium into the plants, this could be, you know, definitely a strategy that is exploited. Right. So the question is if any mixtures of organic compounds were used, and I didn't use that or didn't do those experiments. I would love to, you know, like factorialize this experiment to so many different things, but there just wasn't enough time. But I do think that would be really interesting, especially some of these like enhancing and inhibiting, right? So if you put oxalic acid or histidine and cysteine. Does it just normalize? Does it, you know?
So I was curious if you examined the surfaces of your minerals afterwards, I'll see if you saw weathering pits or preferential sites or precipitates or anything like that.
Yeah. So if we measure, if we looked at the mineral surfaces at all, we did a little bit using SEM. And didn't really see that much difference. We basically saw no difference in any of the minerals, you know, pre-dissolution or post-dissolution. I think because it was purely abiotic, you certainly can see etch pits and things like that, but it's a lot harder. Also, it was kind of we were trying to find big things and didn't really see them and didn't have enough time to look for, like, really in-depth for more. But I would be really interested especially in some of these like combination things, if we could also look at some of those. We didn't do any mineral cleaning before the experiment, and I think that complicates things a lot, but it also, I think, was much more realistic of what might be in the soil, right? Because in a soil, you're gonna have all of this mixture of crystalline phases and amorphous phases jumbled up together. So while that makes it also hard to look at in like SEM and things like that, because there's so much else around, I do think it was maybe a slightly more realistic lab experiment.
Okay, thanks a lot, Carla.
Thank you.